Welcome to On The Mic Podcast. This is your host, Tim Drake. On today's episode, I have comedian Spencer King. Some of you may remember Spencer from my old podcast, My House on the Moon, that I co-hosted. Spencer came on that show back in, I believe it was the mid-spring of 2013. And yeah, that was the last time I really had a chance to sit down and talk with Spencer. I see him from time to time as I'm at shows at Wise Guys Comedy, but yeah, really haven't had a chance to sit down and talk. It was great to talk with him and kind of find out what's new. The last time that we talked, his wife was expecting their first child. So it was kind of cool to talk to Spencer and find out, you know, everything about being a dad now for him and being able to balance his comedy career as well as his family life. It was also fun to talk with Spencer and understand kind of where his comedy process, his writing process comes from. You know, his experience, you know, bouts with depression and trying to find, you know, kind of who he was as a young comic. And looking at everything, you know, that he's at this point gained in his career. So a lot of great advice, a lot of great insight from Spencer. It was really a fun time talking to him, and I'm glad that we were finally able to set this up and make this episode happen. Tomorrow night, if you are in Salt Lake City, make sure to get out to Club 50 West, so you're not going to want to miss the show live on the Mic Podcast with special guest Hello Sweetie and comedian Shane Smith. You heard Shane on last week's episode of the podcast. Shane's going to be opening the show before I take the stage and bring out Hello Sweetie. It's going to be a lot of fun. I am so excited to have Hello Sweetie on the show. If you haven't listened to their podcast, it is fantastic. You should definitely be listening to it. If you like movies, games, TV, comics, all of that, Hello Sweetie is an awesome show to be listening to. So I highly advise that, you know, you check out their show. And like I said, if you're in Salt Lake, come on out tomorrow and enjoy the show. And for coming out, tickets, you know, for one, are only $5. I mean, you can't go wrong with tickets that are $5. But if you come out, you will automatically be entered to win a pair of multi-passes to Salt Lake Comic Con coming up September 24th through the 26th. So that, I mean, $5 for a pair of multi-passes, you cannot go wrong there. And it's going to be an amazing time. Plus, Salt Lake Comic Con gave me a bunch of other cool prizes to go ahead and throw in. There's some Doctor Who posters, some awesome just Salt Lake Comic Con posters, images from some of the past guests. A lot of really cool swag. Plus, we've got some CDs, pop figures, some other movie posters. A lot of fun prizes that I'm giving away. And I really just can't wait to see all of you out there. It is going to be a really fun time. And I kind of look at this as your pre-Comic-Con show. Getting ready to come out to Salt Lake. So, yeah, it's going to be a great time. $5, Club 50 West, downtown Salt Lake City. 7:30 p.m. Hello, Sweetie. Shane Smith. It's going to be a fantastic time. I hope to see you guys all there. And yeah, that's kind of the big thing coming up here. Next week's episode, as I post that, it'll have all the details for Salt Lake Comic Con. Again, go to the On The Mic Podcast website, onthemicpodcast.com. You'll find out all the details there of my schedule. I've got 5 awesome panels that we'll start talking more about as soon as this live episode wraps. You know, that's going to be our main focus for the next week is Salt Lake Comic Con. It's always such a fantastic time. I could not be more thankful for Blake Castleman and Ryan Call, Dan Farr and Brian Brandenburg for all the hard work that they put into putting this show on each year. I mean, really every 6 months. And I mean, I know there's so much more support staff there. Danielle over in marketing, you know, she's just been amazing to work with. She's the one who helped hook us up with the multi-passes we're giving away. So a huge shout out to everybody at Salt Lake Comic Con. That always makes this an amazing time. I'm really looking forward to it next week. And yeah, thank you guys so much. Make sure you check out the website for all of that information as it gets a little bit closer here. Again, a huge thank you to Spencer King. I'm really excited to see Spencer perform this weekend. Make sure you guys get out. Spencer's performing at Wise Guys Comedy in Ogden, Utah. He's headlining Friday night and then opening for Todd Barry Saturday. So, I mean, absolutely amazing shows that you're not going to want to miss. So, I mean, Spencer alone, his headlining set is incredible. So, I mean, you're going to want to see that. But having him host for Todd Barry, I mean, Todd's a fantastic comedian. Huge comic that, you know, why not come out both nights? See Spencer's headlining set and then see him host for Todd Barry. That's Wise Guys Ogden in Ogden, Utah, Northern Utah. So, you know, we don't get up there much. I've got all of my extended family lives up there, but I don't get up there very much. So I'm excited to get up to Wise Guys Ogden this weekend and check out the shows. Make sure you guys go see those. You can buy tickets at wiseguyscomedy.com for that. And yeah, I hope you guys really enjoy this episode. And I hope I see all of you tomorrow night at Club 50 West with Hello Sweetie and Shane Smith. Again, tickets are $5. Make sure you're following me on Twitter. at Tim Drake. Follow On The Mic Podcast at On The Mic Podcast. And yeah, it's going to be a good time, and look forward to seeing you. Enjoy this episode with Spencer King. Because I mean, it's been probably two years, if not a little bit more, since
we did the last...
since My House on the Moon episode.
Yeah. No, I had a kid. Right, I probably was either just had him or was just about to have him at that time.
I think you were, if I remember right, you guys were just about to have
him. Yeah, because he just turned two in August.
So you guys were definitely just about to have him, because I left to Los Angeles in July of that year.
Yeah.
And we had you on, I think, like a month or two before that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I'm still living in that area, like, because I remember it being so really close to where I lived. I was just like, oh, it's just right over here. Because I take my son to that park that's right there.
Okay.
And, yeah, right there on the main road, on Green Lane right there. I take my son to that park all the time, so.
Yeah,
always like, I drive by and I'm like, pretty sure that Drake's podcast was on one of these streets.
that was definitely a while ago. Yeah, I had remembered that when I'd hit you up to see if you wanted to do this episode, because I was like, I know Spencer lives a little ways out there, if he's still out there.
Yeah, no, but I'm still out there. My son is doing great. He's two. He's walking. He's talking. He's having a little attitude. You know, so yeah, it's cool. It's been fun, man.
So who does he take after more at this point, you or your wife?
Oh, me, definitely. Yeah, he's loud and obnoxious, and, like, that's how I was as a kid. I think it's part of the thing. Like, I was always getting told to be quiet, so maybe that's why I want to speak into a microphone all the time.
Yeah. I was so bad with that when I was a kid that I remember my parents got me, it wasn't Ritalin, but it was something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember they would put a little drop of food coloring on the corner of my sandwich to make sure that I ate my pill.
Oh, really?
Just so that I would shut up during class. Oh, because man. I was so all over the place. I needed the attention. And
yeah.
I was just wild as a
Yeah. As I mean, a kid. It's like... There's nothing necessarily wrong. It's just, you know, the kids just have energy, and some kids just, you know, want to express themselves and all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how kids are, I guess. We try to make them more like, I always feel like we try to, you know, not let them be kids at some times, or at least I catch myself doing that. With my son, like, I'll be like, why can't you just understand this? And then I'm like, well, why can't you just let him be a kid? just relax. He's cool. He's fine.
So. I've imagined if I was to ever have a kid that it would be like the episode of a Seinfeld when he has to go see the baby.
Yeah.
And he just looks down on the crib and just, hello. Because I don't know how to speak to kids. Even my nieces and nephews, they'll come up to see me and I can't interact with them like they're little people.
Yeah.
To me, they're just an adult, and
yeah,
I think they're all troubled by me at this point.
I think it changes when you have a kid like that, because I'm the same. I'm still the same way around other people's kids. Like, you know, I still don't want to hold your kid. Like, you know, that hasn't changed. I'm not comfortable holding your child.
Do you have a lot of requests for people to hold?
Like if you're at a family function or something. And somebody just hands you a kid, you know, because they figure, oh, you're a parent now. And I'm like, yeah, I'm a parent, but not of this kid. I was on vacation with my family, and my niece, my little niece who was just born in just a couple months ago, like, you know, she's just like this tiny, even her, I was just like, I don't want to. You know, my sister was like, here, hold her for a second. I'm like, okay, what happens if I drop her, you know? So yeah, it changes when it's your kid. But other than that, like, yeah, it's, you still feel the same way.
Yeah.
About other kids the way you did before.
I think my first sign that I probably shouldn't have kids was when I was in high school, and they had that parenting class. They'd give you, like, the fake baby that you had to carry around. And one of my friends had one of the babies and brought it to work. We all worked at a taco time. So this is like our sophomore year. And I realized that he'd left it up at the drive-thru with me. And its head would kind of concave in.
Yeah.
And it made a great cup holder. Little did I know there was a sensor in the head.
Uh-huh.
And he failed that project because I had used his baby's head as a cup holder.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, that's... Yeah.
Yeah, if only I could do that with a real child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh,
no. I've just realized that 31 now and already with two cats, it's...
It's probably not going to happen. You're just like trying to come to grips with that. I don't know. That's how I am with success. I'm just like, you know what? This is probably it for me, you know? And just got to be okay with that. Be okay with it and just roll with it. But
comedy-wise, things have been definitely... seems like, at least from what I see social media-wise, things have been picking up quite well for you. It seems like you've been part of some bigger comedy shows outside of the state. And, I mean, you get on some great shows, even locally. I know the last one I saw was opening with Joel McHale.
Yeah. That was a lot of fun. Joel's a really nice guy, and we had a good time. And, I don't know. Like... those are really cool moments, you know. Those are what my level of success, you know. Those are the kind of things that I get to do, and I have to learn to appreciate those things more. I think when you're a comedian, especially, or any art, any creative person who's trying to make a living, I mean, they have to come to grips with the fact that if they're not happy currently, then it doesn't matter how much success, you know, commercially or anything, comes, because you won't be happy with it. Yeah. So part of that keeps you driven, you know, because you're still wanting to get better and better and better. But at the same time, it also, you have to realize that, look, if I'm not happy now, it's not going to change if all of a sudden, you know, I am successful. I'm still just going to be looking at whatever's next, being like,
and one of the episodes getting ready to go up was with Alex Watson. We kind of talked about this, where we see a lot of filmmakers, that even guys that have won Oscars, that they still look at it as, I've got that, but what's next? Like, and I think that's just part of being an artist, no matter what form it's in, whether it's comedy or film or writing. You're always... to me, a true artist is never satisfied. They always want that next level of
their
career.
And that's the thing, is that's what happens when you make your art your career, you know, because instead of becoming just a form of self-expression, you know, your art is becoming, you know, your form of self-expression, but also contained within a place where you can package it for it to be consumed by a general.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the thing with, I think, going into the arts and trying to be a profession, do it professionally, is like, it's very rare do you get to do what you want to do and be like, and make the money. Like, there's always, you've got to, it's like, I'm going to do what I want to do, but I'm going to only, you know, work these small rooms that like weird comedians, you know, like, so it's like that, or I'm going to adapt myself to become more, you know, consumer friendly.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's a huge hurdle for a lot of comedians. And I mean, you even hear some of the biggest ones out there today that talk about how it took them years in their career to kind of get that grasp. I mean, Mark Maron's talked about that. Louis talked about that, where it's like, yeah, they're pretty late in their career, really, at this point, where everything has really just kind of exploded, and they're, you know, they have their own shows, they're winning Emmys, and I know I'd heard Maron talk about how Louis had joked with him 20-something years ago that he would be fat and balding before his career would take off. And now Louis laughs at the fact that he's fat and balding and now his career's taken off.
Yeah. Well, you know, those guys, they've got interesting things to... I mean, you know, I don't know anybody in their early 20s that's all that incredibly interesting. There are a few people like that, but...
They've got a lot of jokes about Tinder.
Yeah. So, like... It's just like all my favorite comics are in their 40s or 50s, you know, and it's because they've already experienced what I'm going through, so I can, you know, I can kind of bond with them over that as I'm like, oh, as I realize, like, oh man, yeah, I'm going through that right now. Like, I don't care what this 22-year-old is talking about. Like Tinder, I don't give a crap. I'm like, I don't need to know about that. I don't care. I want to learn about it. Oh, I want to hear about this guy, you know? I start to see more of that in those comedians where I'm just like, oh, here's some good advice coming right now.
Yeah. It, I know for me, at least, it reached a point when I turned 30 where I was just like, shit, like, is everything done? Like, I'd heard for so long, oh, yeah, you have to do things when you're in your 20s, otherwise... You know, nobody's going to care. And then I started looking at them like, well, everybody that I look up to and admire really didn't do anything until their 30s to mid-30s.
And it's not like I'm that old. I'm 34. I'll be 35 this year. And, like...
It's the life experience.
If somebody 20 years older than me was listening to this conversation, they'd just be like, fuck you. You know? Just like you wait 20 more years when you're my age.
Yeah.
You know? So you kind of just got to keep that in mind when you're doing your comedy and not try to be more than you're not. You know, you don't want to try to be too deep when you haven't had a lot of life experience.
Yeah. Yet.
You just want to talk about what you know, man. Talk about what you're going through. Yeah.
So what is it, or I guess when was it, that you had kind of realized that, you know, this is where you wanted your career path to really journey? Because I know I've seen you doing stand-up for probably 3 or 4 years now. Mm-hmm. So how long have you been at it? And then I guess, like, when did it kind of make that transition of that's where you wanted your career path to go?
I've been doing it 12 years, and that transition happened... probably my sixth or seventh year in. So 5 years ago is when it started to shift a little bit. And maybe I'd have to say, because all the depression stuff that I had. So I would say probably 7, 8 years ago is when it started. When I really was able to start talking about stuff like depression, like that was so personal to me, when I was able to start talking about that kind of stuff on stage is when it started to shift for me.
Just when you were really able to be true to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, this is what people are interested in, is they, you know, they want to hear about you and what your struggles are, because they want to know that you are also going, you know, a lot of them are going through the same kind of struggles, and so it's fun to hear people talk about it, as opposed, you know, like, I don't know. That's why I'm not a great, you know, and I can't dive into the minutia you need to be able to dive into to do a really good observational humor, you know? Like, if you're a really good observational comic, you can do you could probably come up with like a good 10-minute chunk on microphone stands or something, just about going to gigs and, you know, but for me, it's like, it'd be more of, you know, if I had to, I'd be more of my experience with microphone stands, I guess, instead of just like taking a look, I'd be like, well, one time I had a stand like this, you know? And that's how I've been trying to make it more personal, I guess. Plus, it's harder, you know, people can't steal your jokes if they're about you.
Yeah.
not that I'm worried about that. Like, I never had any of my jokes stolen by a fat Jew. So, So I can't be that good, I guess.
they're that solid that he just didn't get them in that.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Sometimes I feel like I tweet out like just some brilliant stuff, and then I'm like, it's only brilliant to me.
there was one I tweeted out the other
Everybody
day.
Else probably thought of it a lot quicker than you did.
There was one I tweeted out the other day that I thought was so brilliant, and then I realized that if people didn't understand the meaning of one of the words, they had no clue what the joke meant.
Yeah.
And I had to eventually, like, a few of my friends was like, did you guys not get the joke? And they read it, and they kind of smirked, and I was just like, so to take that as, no, you didn't?
Yeah.
And they were like, no, not really. And I was like, just Google this. So they Googled it.
And then they're like, oh.
Well, and then they kind of read it. And so the joke was, because I've been writing monologue setup jokes. Uh-huh. And it was NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden had a crayfish named after him today. At least it was only a crayfish, said Rick Santorum. And if you don't know what Santorum means, Santorum is a frothy lube for anal sex.
Oh, right.
And Rick Santorum being incredibly homophobic and just anti any gay rights, it was ironic that was named after him.
Yeah.
And so then once people read through it and then they read the joke again, they're like, oh, I was like, I thought I was being smart and witty, but yeah, it fell incredibly flat.
if you try to be too clever, you end up going over people's heads, and that's never good.
No, but that's the way you learn at the same time.
You
can gauge your audience off of those
bomb. Every once in a while you want to keep one of those in your own pocket, you know, keep those one of those for yourself every once in a while on stage. You'll just be like, you'll drop a joke that you only you really likes, and then everyone just kind of stares at you and you're just like, yep, that one was for me.
I did one like that at an open mic, and I remember just looking out, and I told my wife, because it was one of the few times she'd actually come with me, and I was like, I think this joke's gonna fall flat. She's like, well, then why are you doing it? And I was like, I don't know, because if it doesn't, it's going to be a solid one. And then I had a couple Doctor Who jokes. And the first one hit, and the second one fell super flat. I remember I just kind of looked at her and just, and then I just went on to the next one, because it was like, I still find that funny, but yep, never doing that one again, because that one won't hit.
Yeah.
So when you started doing the jokes, you know, kind of building your set kind of around depression and things like that, what was the sense of vulnerability at that point, the first time that you started kind of workshopping some of those jokes?
Well, it's like, I mean, you got to get to a point, you can't be afraid of bombing. Like, it's one of those things, this is one of the things that I believe the most, and I think it holds a lot of people, like good comedians, back from being great comedians, is their fear of doing bad in front of a crowd. I mean, obviously you're not going to want to eat it on very important occasions, but at the same time, like, if I go to an open mic, I mean, I should have no qualms about getting up there and falling flat on my face. Like, that shouldn't even, because one, it's not going to happen, you know, like I'm not going to go on there and it's just going to be crickets for three. Yeah. I mean, I've been doing it long enough to where I can at least kind of like stumble my way through and get a few laughs, and you know, and that just comes from experience. But at the same point in time, you just have to lose that. You just have to like let go and go for it, and then see what happens. And like a lot of times, sometimes it's great, and then sometimes you're just like, well, all right, well, thanks for letting me know about that. So I'm gonna move on.
I know when I had first started into Second City, my parents right away, because I was like, you know, I've always loved everything that, you know, SCTV did, and you know, I want to learn how to generate that. And immediately they were just like, well, those people were all just naturally funny. And I was like, oh, how you are so wrong. I was like, do you realize how many of those guys have written books about how many times they would just tank and just bomb before they developed that sense of timing and understanding who they were as a comedian?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't realize how long sometimes comics have been around developing their entire set and the process they have to, they have to go
people
through.
They don't understand the preparation that goes into a lot of it. That's why, that's why I think it's like, you know, nobody understands why stand-ups are so pissed off about this guy stealing material and making, you know, tons of money off of it, you know, because they don't think, they just think, oh, well, that's just something that this guy thought of, or, you know, like, they don't realize that there is an art to it, and it's a lot harder than they think it is.
I think it was an episode, I always reference it on here, of Nerdist, that they just recently went into, where they kind of went into depth on why the whole thing with the fat Jew just was, it just set the comedy community off, because, there's people that are jumping to defend this guy. And it's like, how can you defend somebody that's just blatantly a thief? He's not doing the work. He's going on copying and pasting somebody's joke and going from there. Like, it's not even...
Well, he was taking their name out of it.
Yeah, he was enlarging it and cutting it out. And...
Yeah, I mean, that he was doing that work.
Yeah.
I guess if you want to get...
It was more or less a craft project at that point. Yeah. But now, I know the feeling, even when it's been... I mean, there was a crappy joke when I was first trying to even figure out how the hell to write 2 minutes worth of a set that I had told another local comic. And it was not a good bit. And he still stole it for a Facebook joke. But then luckily, he wrote it worse than I wrote it.
Yeah.
And it bombed, and I was like, thanks for testing it out for me. Like, I never have to fall flat on my face with that one again. But
Yeah, I don't usually worry about stuff like that. I don't know. it doesn't happen very often, and when it does, there's usually, you know, there's a lot of time. Like, I've been in the, I'm seeing jokes recycle themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I'm not going to give any specifics, because I don't want people to, like, get weirded out. But, like, even in this market, I've seen jokes resurface that guys were doing. And it's the nature of observational humor, because at some point, people are going to forget that somebody made these observations, these same observations. It happens a lot with local material.
Yeah.
You see comics that'll do jokes about something that's local or blah, blah, blah. And so that'll be in the ether for a while. And then after a while it fades out. And then that observation is made by somebody else.
Right.
And so that's kind of weird to be seeing that happening. It's like watching a premise cycle through.
Yeah, and I think it's funny to the degree when people look at the cycle of, especially with observational humor, where people get very defensive on some of those things, like the guy that's even that filed a lawsuit recently against Conan. Mm-hmm. So where he was like, oh, you told 4 jokes similar to mine. And I was like, right, 2 people can make the same observation.
Yeah, and that's more why I switched, focus more on writing autobiographical stuff is more because of that, because I know a lot of people, like, it's like when I play the hashtag game, like I always, any hashtag game that I'm playing on Twitter, I say it like it's an actual game that I'm playing. If I'm coming up with a hashtag,
I think we can say it's an actual game now, though, because At Midnight has it as an actual game.
Yeah. So when I'm playing the At Midnight hashtag game, like, I'll always put it into a search.
Yeah.
To see if how many people have already come up with it, but, like, the same.
I do the exact same thing every time.
And if I'm not the first one, if I'm not the only one that's that shows up in the search, I don't put it out, you know. I need to do it more when I do, because a lot of times I'm always like, man, this seems too easy.
Yeah.
If you do a Google search, and that's the same thing. I think most jokes like that, when something like that happens, like, man, it's, you can't even do topical humor in a stand-up set anymore. Like,
yeah.
Like, you can't, because all the jokes get wasted out on Twitter and Facebook before you even get a chance. Like, they're hacky jokes before the late night talk shows even get to them.
Yeah, and like right now I'm actually studying writing for Late Night with Second City, and like one of the big things I have to do each morning is as I'm getting up, I have to hop on some of those news outlets and find those stories right away and start developing those monologue jokes. And like, there's a few that I even did today that I'm just like, I'm interested to see if between Fallon, Kimmel, and Seth Meyers,
somebody doesn't come up with a similar,
almost verbatim, because it's going to happen. Some of them are just, they're so obvious, and when I can tell they're obvious, I'm like, I don't know if I want to do that one because it's so obvious.
Yeah.
And granted, they still all do it where it's still that obvious because it's still a laugh.
Yeah. Yeah. A laugh is a laugh. I'm just saying, like, as far as stand-up goes, it's like, that's why you used to be able to have one act and ride that act for 20 years because all the people, like, they'd never seen it, or, you know, there wasn't the way information is dispersed now is so rapid and stuff that it's like, oh, this happened. Every joke's been made. already. Every joke about that thing has been made. And you're just like, oh, well, okay.
I feel bad sometimes for, like, the guy.
But if your son threw up into his shoe in the one morning.
Not too many people are making that joke.
Yeah, that's not, I mean, there's maybe something about that at some point, but, you know, there's not going to be 1,000 jokes written about it. So I would focus on the puke.
And that's always, I mean, like you said, it's something that everyone can relate to.
Yeah, and it also depends on what you want to do.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to write for a late night TV show, then yeah, you should be writing those jokes. Like, that's a really great practice, you know, because you can see, one, like you said, you can see if they use something similar, because then you can, in your head, then you can say to yourself, oh, okay, well, that one was good enough to make it to air, and I thought of it on my own, even though somebody else at the writing staff thought of it. It's like, oh, okay. It's like a validation almost.
Yeah.
That, you know, so it depends on what you want to do as far as, like, if I was wanted to write, you know, but those jokes wouldn't go into my act.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
In a long, rambling way.
A nightly monologue's totally different than a stand-up set.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, why put those jokes, like jokes that are more suited for that, into your stand-up
act?
Yeah.
Yeah, and as I sit down and slowly trickle out a new couple minutes to try and get ready to take to an open mic, at that point it's like, okay, well, I can't just give the, you know, it's a good practice, like you said, of kind of getting the whole setup punchline. But yeah, I think it's a lot more challenging to actually sit down and write a few minutes of stand-up, because you're having to construct that story, you're having to give it an arc and give the audience a reason to really give a damn that you're up there and listen to you.
Yeah.
And being able to talk about things, if it is your kid throwing up in a shoe, or, you know, anything within your family, or just some, you know, crazy thing that had happened to you that day, it's something that everybody, they're going to be able to relate to in one way or another.
Yeah. I'm just saying, and that's all I'm saying with the, I'm not trying to knock anybody or any kind of jokes, because I like topical humor. I'm just saying that it sucks kind of that's going, like, it's kind of off on its own little wayside of, now the only place to get access to those jokes is, like, through Twitter.
Yeah.
Because you don't, it kind of loses the personal touch of seeing somebody say that on stage.
Yeah, very true.
Would have given you, you know.
Anyway. Because, I mean, you would hear, you know, some of the old comics from before the days of social media, let alone even the internet. And yeah, that was a big part of their sets, was talking, you know, the topical stories of the day. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the Bob Rivers albums that used to come out, that, and they would encompass a new story from that entire year and into their songs.
Yeah.
And it's like, now with YouTube and all of that,
is that Bob Rivers from Seattle?
I think so.
Oh yeah, I know his kid.
Oh really?
Andrew. Yeah, he's a comic. He's really funny.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I used to listen to those albums all the time, but now you can click on YouTube and,
yeah,
you know, 100 people have done a parody of one of the big hits of the day, and it's just like, yeah, it's done now. Whereas we used to go out and buy those albums because that was, yeah, the only place you could,
yeah,
you could hear something like that.
Yeah.
So I know I just listened to an interview with Weird Al where he was even talking about how, yeah, what he used to be able to do, you know, 20 years ago, people thought he was just going to be a flash in the pan and nothing was going to come of him. And of course, he's made this huge career, but now, again, everybody's doing,
yeah,
parodies and,
yeah,
and so it's like, where do I go from here?
Yeah.
So with being a dad and everything now, I mean, what's it like to kind of have that family balance with comedy?
I don't care about comedy as much. I mean, it does change that. Like, I mean, my son, you know, I spend a lot of time with him because I take care of him during the day. And so, yeah, that's what I worry about most of the time is taking care of him. So anytime I can get to focus on stand up and stuff is great, but at the same time, it's more about him.
Yeah.
So I guess the balance is, you know, it's swung more in favor of family at this point, which is a good thing, not necessarily for a stand up career, but it's a good thing.
Yeah.
I can think of one comedian that I know that is still married to the same person that they are married to when I started comedy. And I can only think of one guy. Everybody else that I know has either never been married or been married and divorced.
And I mean, do you attribute that to just to the dedication it takes to really build that career?
Yeah,
in comedy?
I think partly, and like the when guys, if you're gonna do comedy, and first of all, if you're married, don't ever try comedy, because if you're any good at it and you start, yeah, you'll end up divorced. So don't. The only reason I don't think I am divorced is because my wife is crazy. No. And incredibly patient. I'll just say that. She puts up with a lot. So, yeah. So anyway.
I think that just means that you have a wife that has that has a lot of great faith in what you're doing. Because, I mean,
yeah, she understands why I do it.
Yeah.
That it's not solely because, you know, that I'm doing it and it's not like, it's not just a job for me. So she understands that.
Yeah.
Yeah, part of it. And so I think that helps a lot. But, you know, you throw a kid into the mix and it gets a little more complex. You know, things get a little more complex. And so yeah, it's rough. I mean, it's not easy. But at the same time, it is kind of nice to care about something more than comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. So. It lets you take that time of self-reflecting to kind of see where everything balances in life.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even with my wife, I mean, I look back and like when I see people that'll friend me on Facebook from high school and stuff, or people that I'd gone on a date with, you know, 10 years ago or so. And it's like, had I ended up with anybody other than my wife, I wouldn't be able to do what I do. And the fact that, I mean, we just kind of get lucky when we do have a wife that, you know, realizes that it is more than just, you know, for you doing stand-up, for me, like anything with film or podcasting or Comic-Con, like,
yeah,
it's more than just, you know, being there. It's something that, it's what makes us tick.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like, it's also for our emotional well-being. We do it, yeah, for our emotional well-being, you know? So I think that part of it is like, is nice that my wife understands that.
Yeah.
Part of it.
I think it was Chris D'Elia that, I mean, you mentioned people that, you know, comedians that have been divorced mm-hmm. because of the time. And he had even talked about how, because he's divorced, and how he had realized that when he started doing stand-up, you know, he was hitting up every single night at some club out in Los Angeles. And that he was more married to comedy than he was to his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And so hearing a lot of comics that are divorced, you know, kind of reflect back on that. I think it's good to be self-aware that it does take that kind of dedication. So, and that, I mean, even if you are in a relationship, whether you're married or dating somebody, that person recognizes that.
Yeah.
That they realize straight up that this is what they're getting into. And if they're not okay with that, like, yeah. it's something that, you know, it's not just going to affect your life, it's going to affect theirs wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there's always people that think they're the exception to the rule, and most of the time they find out the hard way that they're not.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's always going to be one thing or another that suffers, whether it's their comedy or their marriage, because you can only give so much to every single aspect that you're trying to, yeah. that you're trying to tackle.
Yeah. I think that's why, you know, you see so many, like, these older comedians that have these younger kids, because they didn't really start their families until they were, you know, they had already been successful. And, you yeah. know, part of me is like, that's a smart thing to do, because, you know, there's a lot of crap that you have to go through to get to those places. And not everybody, there's not a lot of people that are willing to just hang on and,
yeah,
and go through it. You know,
yeah, I mean, it's like going round after round after round against, like, Muhammad Ali. Like, you're just going to continually get your ass kicked, but you have to keep getting up and getting your ass kicked again and getting yeah. back up. And yeah, it's the continual uphill battle that you don't necessarily know if you are ever going to reach.
Yeah, and
you even reach the summit.
Yeah, you're It's like trying to, like you said, it's like climbing a mountain with no trail, like, and everyone just has to kind of figure it out for themselves. Yeah. And
I think the great disillusion is that people think that there is a trail, and
yeah, and they're just really trying not to find that trail.
Yeah.
And really, it's like, you got to realize there is no trail.
There might be some footholdings, but
yeah,
but that's about it.
Yeah. There's some places that look really nice that are easier to get. Anyway, that's probably, there's a lot of analogy that you can read into it, but basically, yeah, there's no trail for stand up. There's nothing that says if you do this and do this, then this will happen. It's kind of different for everybody.
Yeah.
Which is, it's what makes it exciting, and what's also what makes it horrifying at the same time.
Yeah. So with, I mean, coming up here, you've got your headlining at Wise Guys Ogden.
Yeah.
So as you've built towards this new set that you're doing, I mean, what has kind of been the driving force, mm-hmm. aside from, you know, having a kid and spending so much time with him, what has kind of been the driving force of building this new set?
It's not as dark as my last, like, I'm only like 20 minutes into it, I think. There are still jokes about death, but they're much lighter. No, I don't know. It's, you know, it just depends on how I am. You know, I can't write against how I'm feeling. So a lot of times my material just kind of reflects what kind of mood. Like, I'm writing a lot about being a stay-at-home dad and the things that go along, like what people think and stuff like that, yeah. that goes along with it. And so that's been a lot of fun to explore that, and so that's what I'll be focusing on mostly.
So with a lot of the bigger touring comics that have come through, I mean, like I said, I mean, you just opened for Joel. I know you've opened for Chris Hardwick mm-hmm. a few times. You get to spend a lot of time with these comics while they're in town. What's the greatest thing that you've kind of taken away from them while you've been able to spend that time and you know, be part of their shows?
Uh, It helps if you're good looking. And it's interesting that you bring those guys up because those guys are kind of fairly new to stand up, you know, relatively new. But they really, what's cool about them is they really respect the craft of it. And so they're always really working. Like each time I see them, I always notice like things like, oh, cool. So that's kind of interesting. Sorry, that wasn't what the question was about, but that just what it made me think.
No, that's,
I'm sorry.
No, I mean, you're totally right.
What advice, other advice would I, do I glean off of it? Well, I just, basically all I try to do is just talk to them and, you know, just, I try not to let the discussion go too comedy related unless they're pushing it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like me and Andy Kindler one time after like the time I worked when he was in here in Salt Lake, we spent about 2 hours at Village Inn after the show just talking in shop, like just talking about comedy. And that's because he loves doing that.
Yeah.
And I love doing that. And so, you know, and so times like that are kind of rare when you click with somebody that, you know, that you don't really know. So it's like, so basically what I've learned is you just have to, it helps if you're, one thing is it helps if you're nice to people. Another thing is, yeah, like find whatever your niche is and play to that. And that's, I don't know, that's another thing that I've kind of gleaned from those guys.
So no, I'm not, I think that's, if anything, even just from watching, you know, even the locals here, that's something that I've picked up of really understanding where your niche really is and where you fit into that. So, but yeah, that I think it's interesting that you say, you know, trying to talk to them on a more personal level, unless, you know, talking shop is what they want to do.
Yeah.
Because yeah, I think that's something that so many of us, as we meet, you know, people that, you know, we've idolized, that's just where our mind goes. So that's
yeah,
what,
yeah, yeah. And everybody's already asked them those questions,
yeah.
You know, and they don't, and it's tough not to do that.
Like, yeah.
It's really hard because yeah, that's the stuff that you want to talk to them about, but a lot of times if you just, I don't know, I find that I get like more information out of them if I'm not actively seek, if I'm not like grilling them, like interviewing them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's, I think especially with, you know, being able to, and I know you've been gracious enough to even tell people that when I've waited around after Wise Guy shows that hey, there's some weird guy out there waiting that wants to talk to you.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I love that people will just, you know, for the most part, the crowds will just leave afterwards. A few people stick around.
Yeah.
And I love that even just with those few minutes, being able to talk to certain comedians and just being able to talk to them on a personal level. And I mean, of course they always want to hear, hey, you know, great show. That it's always redeeming to know that, hey, I didn't suck. But I love being able to spend that few minutes just kind of talking to them and just being able to have that personal connection with them for that moment.
Yeah.
And be able to separate them from the stage, per se.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's where I think I've learned more about how to act just within the entertainment industry. Uh-huh. and growing up in it to make you be somebody that people want to work with.
Yeah.
So, and I know one that I hear every comic I talk to, it gets brought up, I feel like, every few episodes on this, is just everybody always kind of goes back to Tracy Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
Because of just how gracious and how nice he was to just everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, he was nice, but like, but it was never about him being nice. It was about him getting your attention so he could tell
yeah.
you a story. Like, a hilarious story, but he would ask a question and then he would just answer the question without anybody, like, he would be like, hey, any of you guys, what's the local scene like? Well, I'll tell you what it should be like. And then, you know, like, he would go into this thing about the perfect local scene or whatever. Anyway, but he would do that all the time. Like, he did that a couple, like, quite a few times. It was pretty funny.
The other that stuck out to me.
He's really nice to everybody.
You know? He was super nice. And then I can't remember if you had opened the show or not. Did you open for Bargatze?
Oh, Bargatze, I did. Yeah.
Bargatze was one that really stuck out to me, just with how personal he really is when he comes out to talk to you, especially because I think I was the only one that was even waiting around to see him afterwards, and it was weird almost to talk with him because. I'm used to meeting people and they're still very animated in person.
Yeah.
And he is very introverted, really.
Yeah.
And I could really sense his sincerity in talking to people.
Yeah.
And that was something that really stuck with me.
Yeah, and it's hard to manufacture that sincerity.
Yeah.
Because, believe me, I know I've tried and anyway. But, yeah, it's hard to manufacture that. And a lot of people, you know, they just have that ability.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible to manufacture it, but you've got to, like, train to go against your instincts, I guess. I don't know. I've been grappling with this fact that I don't, my just normal face when I'm just, you know, just standing around or whatever is not necessarily the most welcoming. Like, my eyebrows have just naturally arched pretty high arches. So I look like I'm pissed off all the time. And it sucks because I think it rubs people the wrong way. They look at me and I can see them going from, hey, and I'm even trying to be nice, you know, like I'm not trying to. So I guess I just have like really bad RBF. And I don't know how to, like, that's why I, like, love guys like Nate that are so personable and because, man, it's like, I see people's faces, like, look at me and then go from being pleasant to being, like, skeptical or, you know, like, and I'm just like, what? I haven't even said anything yet. And you're already going to, like, give me this stink eye. You just smiled at the guy in front of me. What the hell? What's going on here?
It just becomes a super passive-aggressive moment of just zero words being exchanged.
Yeah, I, like, look at him and I'm just like, and then so I'm, like, trying to be nice. I'm like, hey, thanks, yeah, have a good day. And they're like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, hi, okay, bye. I'm like, you just had a conversation with that guy. Like, what a... I don't know. I give off, it's like a weird vibe that I give off. I don't know what it is. I've been trying to figure it out for the last 5 years and I haven't quite figured it out yet.
I think one thing that, I mean, I know a lot of comedians I've heard say things similar to it. And I think what a lot of it is as a comedian, and again, it's just the environment of it all is, you're very observational. Mm-hmm. So you're soaking in everything around you. And it's not that, you know, you mean to have any type of look. It's just that you're taking everything in.
Yeah. Cause I noticed that I noticed it with my son that he does the same thing. And so now I'm like, wow, that's really annoying when it looks like he's not paying attention to you. I'm like, holy crap. That's what I do to people. Oh no. And it has nothing to do with the company. It's just that, yeah, like I take everything. I'm very highly observational, even though I don't write a lot of comedy, but like when I go somewhere, I have to look everywhere and I can see how, yeah, now I'm starting to see how it might be annoying to people. And I'm like, no, it's nothing. Like, there's just so much. I'm just trying to take everything in. It's like, it's hard for me. Maybe it's just, I'm ADD or something. I can't focus. I'm just like, what was that? What was that? What's that over there? Oh, there's something moved over. Wait, what was this guy saying? Yeah. Son of a... Ah!
That's exactly how I am. And it's funny because I drink a lot of caffeine so that it keeps me under control.
Really?
It helps me focus.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I would think it would be the opposite.
Yeah, and that's what most people think. It'd make it helps you me hyper focus.
Oh, wow.
My freshman year in college, I was sitting in a biology class, and I would drink one of the Rockstar recoveries every time before that class. Mm-hmm. And I was watching my grades go up, and I was like, wait, what the hell? Like, I've always sucked in this class. And I started realizing every time I was doing that, I was actually taking notes in the class. Like, mm-hmm. I was focused. And so every time I have something that I have to stay focused for, mm-hmm. I'll pound one of those Rockstar recoveries. It's probably going to kill me sooner or later. but I pound it, and it helps me stay focused. Even as I'd started doing improv, it was like I knew that I needed just to have that sharp attention to detail, mm-hmm. and be able to just have just oversensitive listening.
Yeah.
And so I would down one of those, and I would perform better. Hmm. But otherwise, I'm just, yeah, it's, you know, look at that. Oh, look at that over there. And I know it drives my wife nuts, because we'll be out and about, and sometimes something will just set me off. What the fuck was that? What are you looking at?
Yeah.
Like, you didn't see that? How did you miss that? Because that's not what we're doing. Like,
yeah. No, I get that. It's hard for me to focus sometimes. I always blame it on the meds.
Yeah.
It's the meds. It's a new med. That's what I'm trying, a new med. Sorry. Sorry about that.
Yeah, every time I have like a new group that I'm working with on something, I'll forewarn them that I'm just like, look, if I don't have enough caffeine in me, coffee or Rockstar, my ADHD might be out there, and you know, I hope we're all just ready to be along for the ride. And usually when I have forewarned them, that's when they'll just, something random will be said. And luckily, I think it saved my ass. Because then they're just like, oh, there goes his mental issues. He, we knew this was coming.
I'm glad he warned us. Because otherwise, this might have been really annoying.
And I don't think he said one of the side effects was grabbing my ass, but here we are. So outside of this this show coming up here, do you have any other shows? I know every so often I see that you go up to Portland to perform. Mm-hmm. Has that been part of the Bridgetown Comedy Festival that's up there?
Bridgetown? Yeah, no, I've never done the festival. I just do the club when I'm up there. No, I've never been asked to do the festival. I've submitted a couple times, but they're not interested in what I do. I guess I'm not for them, which that's fine.
it's part of the process.
It's there, yeah, whatever. Yeah. It's a weird dynamic between festivals and getting into them, because a lot of it has to do, you could have like a really good tape and that'll get you in if it's a really good one, and for some reason like guys will have one, it'll get them into a bunch of festivals. And sometimes if you have a tape that's not too good, then you don't get into anything. But I don't know, man, some festivals, it's like some guys seem like they do all the festivals, and then some guys do no festivals. Like, it's a really weird, it's a really weird dynamic. Anyway, sorry.
<You're good. laughs> So now I know you've done, is it open mics that you've done down at the Comedy Store, or is it regular shows that you've been booked on down there? I know we briefly talked about that a while back.
I've done a show. When I go down to the Comedy Store, it's in the Belly Room, which is the small room upstairs. And it's a show called The C Word Show. For a while it was run by Eliza Schlesinger and Jody Miller, and that's when I started doing it. I've done it a couple of times, and now it's Jody Miller's running it along with, I think her name is Suna, something that starts with a B, but anyway. And they've been nice enough to let me do time when I go down there. So like a lot of times if I'm going to LA, like I'll do it around some, like if I have an audition or a showcase at a club, then I'll try to book stuff around that. And so I've never really tried to do the open mics, cause I've been lucky enough to actually to get on shows when I've tried to go to the clubs. But yeah, I would. And a lot of times I'm not there. It's like their open mics are, you know, on a Monday or a Tuesday. And if
the Comedy Store's on a Sunday, it's a weird...
Yeah.
So it's a weird time.
And the Comedy Store, you have to sign up the week before.
Yeah.
To do it. So it's like, so it's not very, it's not, you, it's hard to do
it. And then it's still a lottery.
Yeah, and then it's still a lottery. But, you know, it's not, it's hard for an out-of-towner. But yeah, there's like, it's, there's showcases and stuff all over LA that is usually what I'll do. I'll have like one kind of decent, legit show, showcase or something, and then a bunch of other stuff. Or not, sometimes not, just depends.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a very, it can be very, very hit or miss out there. What one room I would honestly, next time you're down there, if you're there during their open mic, I would suggest hopping on, is the one over at Nerd Melt.
So does Nerd Melt have an open mic?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You just knowing your style of comedy, I think you would do fantastic over there.
Huh.
So that would be one I would definitely tell you to, if you're down there one of the nights they're doing it, they usually do theirs on Monday nights.
Yeah.
But yeah, you would fit in very well with that dynamic down there. That's one that, yeah, if you're down there.
Oh yeah, I'll have to check it out. I didn't know they did an open mic. I knew they had the shows there, but
yeah, and their shows just keep growing and growing and growing too. It's insane to go to some of those shows sometimes.
Yeah.
But more, I think I've learned more watching some of those shows than I ever would have anticipated just going to a random stand-up show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, those are they have a lot of those now where, like, really hip shows that have, like, really great acts on them, and it's just like, you go to them and you never know who's going to show up sometimes.
Yeah, it's one of the dynamics that I love of going to shows in Los Angeles. So, well, before we kind of wrap things up, where can everybody find you on social media and everything?
I'm at Twitter is at Spencer King, SpencerKing, for those of you who don't spell. at Spencer King on Twitter. And that's, yeah, really, you can find me on Facebook if you want, but I don't really post there that often. So at Spencer King on Twitter is probably the best way to see what I am up to, if you care.
and then the show at Wise Guys Ogden is September 18th.
September 18th. And then the night after that is I'll be hosting on Todd Berry. Todd Berry's going to be in town, so
yeah,
you should come check out.
Yeah, I am going up to that one. I've always wanted to see Todd Berry.
That's going to be fun. So yeah, I'll be headlining the night before, and then it'll be Todd Berry on Saturday.
So awesome. Well, thanks for making it over. I know we've talked about doing this for a while.
Yeah, I know. Like, I'm glad we were able to make it happen. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. And yeah, hopefully it'll be a great turnout for both of those shows. And
I hope so.
So if
this goes out before then, please come to my show on Friday. Yeah, that would be awesome. I don't know.
Yeah, I've never been to a show at Wise Guys Ogden.
Oh yeah,
so great. I'm excited to check this out. I've always heard how great of a venue it is.
Yeah, it's sweet. You'll love it.
So cool. Well, thank you, Spencer.
No, thanks.